Major funding for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities. It's Soundings from the National Humanities Center, conversations and commentary featuring scholars and visitors at the center. This is Wayne Pond. The National Humanities Center is an independent, nonprofit institute that encourages excellence in scholarship and affirms the importance of the humanities in American life. Paganism and Christianity in the Early Years of the Common Era, this week on Soundings. The speakers are Peter Burian, a scholar of classical literature at Duke University, and Bart Ehrman, a professor of New Testament studies from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Say pagans today, and many people think of unruly motorcycle gangs. What was paganism? When did it flourish? Why did it decline? And how did it give way to Christianity in religious, cultural, and political terms? Here is Bart Ehrman.
Well, I suppose we have to begin with what happened with the followers of Jesus after his death sometime around the year 30 of the Common Era. Soon thereafter, they started spreading Christianity outside of the Jewish religion among pagans. Mm-hmm. For a couple of hundred years, it spread. I think most scholars go to about the 4th century. The early 4th century is the time when things really shifted to the Christianization of the Roman Empire.
In other words, it took that long for paganism as a kind of a cultural force to wind down and for Christianity to come into the ascendancy.
Well, I don't think that it even wound down by the beginning of the 4th century. I think that took a couple of more centuries. But with the conversion of the emperor, the Roman Emperor Constantine, around the year 312, is when most scholars date the transition from a largely, predominantly pagan empire to one that became predominantly Christian by the end of the 4th century.
Geographically, what are we talking about? Peter Burian, I could say to you, the Roman Empire. Is it as simple as that? How else do we ground it geographically?
Well, of course, paganism is a force, a presence throughout the Roman Empire. But if we try to understand what paganism is, I think we have to start with the local unit. That is, paganism, in the first instance, is a series of practices, cults, rituals, civic festivals, and that local organization that tie to the specific place is what gives it its special character, and I think it can be argued also gives it its longevity. There is a whole world of mythology which is largely shared through the empire. The phenomenon called syncretism was designed in part to produce a kind of koine, one could say, a kind of common mythological discourse.
Syncretism, let me stop you for a moment. This is a word that the pagans used or that scholars used to look back on paganism?
Well, it's a Greek word, but it's a word that scholars use to talk about the literally growing together of cults. People discover that a god known here by one name and there by another has the same attributes, is in some way the same deity, and so on. This sort of mythology, and indeed the philosophical systems that were prominently part of paganism in late antiquity, are nevertheless not really the essential phenomenon.
I think most pagans might agree with that statement, that it's the problem with Christianity is a problem of practice, that the Christians are refusing to offer sacrifices, particularly for the emperor, for the genius of the emperor. I think most Christians, though, probably saw this more as a doctrinal matter. Most Christians understood that by sacrificing to the emperor, they in fact were compromising their own belief system. Christians thought that the Roman gods, in fact, were evil demons, and so by caving in to the authorities, as they saw it, they would be worshiping demons.
Did they really truly think of them as demons, or was this a political exercise so that their spirits would take precedence over these other spirits, so to speak? How about that?
Well, I'm not sure I know how to answer that question. One possible thing to say is that the obvious move of simply saying these gods don't exist was not available to Christians because the power, the force of these old local beliefs was so strongly rooted, so that it was necessary, in fact, to demote them by taking a different tack, that is, by suggesting that they represented real forces, real powers in the world, but powers opposed to the true God.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, becomes a political gesture, obviously.
Does the belief precede the politics or the other way around? How do we untangle that knot, Peter?
Again, I don't feel sure about this, but one would have to say that Christianity, to the extent that it adopts this point of view, is adopting a notion of a world with God at one pole and humanity at another, in which the interstices, the upper air at any rate, is full of spirits,
right,
full of beings, angels, demons, whatever you want to call them. And to that extent, there is a kind of grafting onto Christianity of an element of paganism that is found to be politically useful, or at least helpful in explaining Christianity to non-Christians.
Why do we call paganism cultish? Bart Ehrman, why do we use a word like that when we look back on it?
Well, paganism was focused on the cult. Paganism wasn't focused on a belief system or a doctrinal system. A person could be a pagan, whatever they happened to believe.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't much matter what their doctrine was. What mattered was whether they performed the ritual acts,
mm-hmm.
Normally acts of sacrifice in a some sacred place.
Sort of like the Democrats today. They have this large identity and they have very local practices. They're accused of not having a sort of national coherence. Is that too much of a stretch?
Well, I think that it's true that paganism didn't have much coherence. Paganism represents hundreds of religions that were scattered throughout the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
We call it paganism just as a way to designate these various polytheistic religions, to put them over against religions that were seen to be fairly unique, Judaism and Christianity.
Uh-huh. Well, now, you know, here I'm joking with you about the Democrats and the pagans, but let's be serious for a moment and address the stereotype of, for example, sexual libertinism, orgies, all these very large notions that we associate with paganism. Surely these are bum raps, are they not, Bart?
Well,
not altogether.
Maybe or maybe not. Certainly there were orgies in paganism, as there were orgies in a lot of different systems. It is worth pointing out that one of the most frequent accusations made by pagans against Christians
mm-hmm.
is precisely that they engaged in nocturnal orgies in which people would have sexual intercourse with people to whom they weren't married. Sometimes they were accused, in fact, of slaughtering infants and then eating these infants in a cannibalistic rite.
Now, this is the pagans making the accusation against the Christians.
That's right. It's made by a number of our surviving literary sources from all over the Roman Empire.
Uh-huh. All right. Now, as a scholar, tell me, what might be the basis for this kind of thing? Is this political control that's going on? What?
Well, this kind of polemic was common when one didn't approve of one's enemies. It was common to accuse them of incest and cannibalism. I think Christianity was particularly prone to this kind of accusation because the meetings in which the Christians had their get-togethers were secret.
Mm-hmm.
They were often done at night. Pagans knew that these people called each other brother and sister, and that part of the ritual was engaging in a holy kiss. They knew that part of the ritual involved eating the flesh and drinking the blood of the Son of God. And so there were all sorts of reasons for thinking that, in fact, these secret antisocial groups were engaged in this kind of activity.
Peter Burian, that's the sort of stuff that I thought we should associate with the pagans, not the Christians.
Well, I'm not sure we should associate it with either. Now, in the case of the pagans, it's certainly true that there is a tradition of orgiastic and ecstatic practices. By the time you get to late antiquity, these things are really very carefully controlled. I mean, we know about groups like the Iobaki who were...
No, wait, just let me stop you for a moment. Late antiquity, you mean roughly when?
Well, you have to understand that my special field is the 5th century BC, so okay. Perhaps I bring late antiquity further forward than many people would, but
fair
I mean
enough.
the common era.
Okay.
I'm really now talking about religious practices at the time of Christ and beyond. We know of groups, for example, dedicated to the cult of Dionysus, the god of wine, mainly because we have these elaborate instructions about exactly how much wine you could drink and exactly what was and what wasn't appropriate behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, as in the case of Christianity, this sort of thing and the many mystery cults, practices about which we know fairly little still today, precisely because they were kept secret, would obviously provide plenty of material for polemicists.
For example, what I'm thinking is this, Bart Ehrman, Peter Burian, did paganism have a St. Paul? Did it have somebody who sort of traveled around and spread the word and tried to draw it all together, or would that have run contrary to the very identity, the very notion of pagan cults? Peter?
Well, I don't think that you could have someone like St. Paul trying to convert people to paganism. We certainly know of texts which, in effect, proselytize for particular cults or beliefs even,
mm-hmm.
By arguing their merits, or also by showing the kind of ecstasy and happiness that they can produce. An interesting pagan text in this context would be the 11th book of the Metamorphoses, or the Golden Ass by Apuleius, in which a figure who becomes identified with Apuleius in some way in the course of the telling of it has a vision of the great goddess, the great mother of all of the world and all of life, who in her grace transforms him back from his miserable state as an donkey, an ass. He's been mm-hmm. transformed by playing around with magic, back to human life on a new and higher plane. So the idea that pagans might wish to convert people to their practices and beliefs certainly lies to hand, but there isn't a single paganism to convert people to. There are philosophical doctrines that are associated with a kind of stream of pagan thought in the empire. There are certainly attempts to systematize paganism in some ways, its very local nature, under a great single dominating figure such as Sol, the sun god, the particular object of the Emperor Julian the Apostate's devotion. Julian, of course, might be thought something like the St. Paul of paganism. He tried to restore paganism to a position of dominance.
Was it possible, for instance, to be pious? We use the word pious and we associate that with Christianity. Was it possible to be a pious pagan? How about this, Bart Ehrman?
Certainly. Many pagans were pious in the sense that they followed their religion seriously. I think that
did they think of it as a religion, way Christians thought of Christianity as a religion?
Well, they don't. Greek doesn't even have a word for religion. In fact, the Greek word that we would translate as religion is the word piety. I think the point about whether there could be a Saint Paul or not in paganism is a very important point, though, because as Peter has pointed out, there are people who converted to worshiping one god or goddess or another, engaging in one sort of cultic act or another. The difference with the Christians was that they insisted that their religion was the only correct religion. Their god was the only true god, so that if you refused to worship this god, you, in fact, were bringing upon yourself all sorts of terrors in this life and in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Peter Burian?
Well, I would just like to use that to reflect on the question you asked earlier about whether it is the lack of a kind of coherence and single identity that condemns paganism to the ash heap of history.
Right.
What guarantees Christianity the victory, in a way, is that it becomes associated by the 4th century with the whole apparatus of the state. And mm-hmm. as the state then withers away, its institutions are really lodged in the institutions of the church.
Give me a series of quick takes here, Bart Ehrman and Peter Burian, about notions such as sin and death. I say this with an utterly straight face, the meaning of one's life, the notion of spiritual progress. Were there analogs in paganism corresponding to the sorts of stereotypes that we have about what it means to lead a Christian life, thinking about things like that, Bart?
Well, I think there are certainly some parallels between pagan understandings of the meaning of life and religion and Christians thinking of the same things. I think most Christians and most pagans were looking for a religion which would, in fact, bring benefits to them.
In other words, how to get through life.
How to get through life. This is how to have health, how to become wealthy, how to win the love of somebody. And the religion was one way of securing that, and for many people is about the only way to secure it. I think Christianity ended up succeeding because people became convinced that the Christian God was more powerful to bring about good results than the pagan gods. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've got a Christian preacher who, in fact, has convinced people that his God is superior to the whatever pagan gods they happen to be worshiping at the time, then he's won converts away from paganism. If a pagan preacher has convinced pagans that his God is superior, he hasn't won any converts to paganism. In other words, if you've got a pagan preacher and a Christian preacher, and they both convince half of their audience, paganism has lost half of its adherents.
Uh-huh. Is it fair to talk about, to use a word like paganism in the modern world as we look back on this transition from the pagan to the Christian, and to associate words with it like Satanism and the occult rather than simply cults and cultishness? Are we doing a disservice to scholarship and to the identities of men and women who lived hundreds of years ago? Peter?
We most certainly are. I think we can be very definite about this one, at least. Of course, a lot of pagans, I mean now historical pagans of the Roman imperial period that we've been talking about, were involved in, interested in various kinds of occult phenomena. There's no question about that. But there's no reason to associate paganism per se with Satanism or outlandish and antisocial and horrific practices of any kind. Paganism was rooted, pagan practice was very closely associated with animal sacrifice. So uh-huh. there's a certain amount of bloodshed connected with the practice of paganism, of various kinds of paganism all through the empire. But lots of pagans led extremely moral, upright lives. Look, let me try to draw some of this together by saying that paganism and Christianity really do come out of the same world in so many ways, so that you have, for example, wonderful examples of ascetic, philosophical pagans. There's the famous Hypatia, for example, in Alexandria, who in 415, who was a woman philosopher, proud of her virginity, and who had a kind of philosophic school. And she was killed, martyred, one might even say, in riots between initially Jews and Christians that seemed to represent, among other things, a struggle for power between a prefect of the city of Alexandria called Orestes, who, however, was or said he was a Christian, and the bishop. Uh-huh. So it's not that the pagans are somehow simply steeped in the blood of the Christian martyrs and so on. There were worthy, upright pagans. There were pagans interested in occult phenomena and astrology, of course, and in fact, these things were not entirely foreign to Christianity. These religions develop and grow in what has often been referred to as an age of anxiety. They are working on ways of, well, we do too, of course, and we have a lot of the same problems, working toward ways of living the best possible life and ways of salvation, and lots of pagan practices involving initiation and mystery religions are directed, just like Christianity, to personal salvation.
Bart Ehrman, you had a comment?
Yeah, I look at the relationship of paganism and Christianity, I think, in a very similar way. I think it's wrong to elevate Christianity as a religion that is totally unlike anything in paganism. Hmm. When I teach classes in New Testament, I normally begin my class by pondering where one might start in a discussion of the New Testament. I generally tell my classes that it seems to me the only place to start is with a life of a man who lived in the empire in its early years, a man who's born in a remote province. His mother and father we don't really know very much about, although we know that his mother was visited by some heavenly messenger who told her that her son wasn't going to be a normal human being, he was going to be the Son of God. He had a miraculous birth, a precocious childhood. As he grew up and became a man, he went on an itinerant preaching ministry, going from village to village, preaching the good news of his message. He healed people, he cast out demons, he raised people from the dead, and at the end of his life, the authorities decided he had to be done away with.
All right, let me stop you. What you're headed for is either this is supposed to be the life of Jesus Christ, or it's going to be exactly the opposite. Are you setting us up here,
Bart? This is well, when he was killed, his followers said he had been raised from the dead, and people wrote books about it. This is the life of Apollonius of Tyana. He was a contemporary of Jesus. He never met Jesus. He, in fact, was a Neo-Pythagorean philosopher, a pagan. Christians, of course, worship Jesus, and other people, pagans, had other leaders that they followed. I think it's wrong to say that Christianity was absolutely unique. Right. In fact, there are many elements of Christianity very much like what you find in paganism.
Let's move toward a conclusion of our conversation. Bart Ehrman and Peter Buren were talking about this wonderful transition from paganism to Christianity. Surely paganism survives. We live with it. It must be all around us, and yet we can afford to be so condescending, and we're secure in this sort of cultural identity, whether we are or not Christians. We think, well, that's the predominant mode of our lives. What about this, Peter?
Well, I don't think that we can talk about the end of paganism at all. In fact, you're right, paganism in many ways does survive, and if we feel somehow culturally superior, we have to remember that we are standing, for example, on the shoulders, figuratively speaking, of a great canon of ancient literature and philosophy that was saved for us because it still spoke to and could be in some way incorporated in the new Christian culture.
And a lot of that was pagan.
A lot of it was pagan. Yeah. I mean, Plato, Aeschylus, Homer, Virgil, Ovid.
Isn't this a wonderful irony that the people who argue for the preservation of the Western canon, that is to say our inheritance, and many times associate that with rather conservative Christian values, fail to recognize the pagan roots of a lot of what they stand for?
They do indeed, and I think they also probably fail to recognize that lots of things in Christian religion, at least in some forms of Christian religion, festivals, saints, cults of saints that develop on the same ground as and in very similar terms to the cults of pagan heroes, are part and parcel of what we understand as our Christian inheritance. Let me give you one, I think, quite charming example that I picked up traveling in southern Italy at the wonderful archaic Greek temples of Hera at Pestum, south of Naples, south of Salerno. This is a shrine that goes way back and was used for hundreds of years, and in it, in this cult, Hera, the consort of Zeus, Juno, she'd be known as to the Romans, was really a fertility goddess. We know this because there are something like a million little statuettes of Hera dedicated by women who wanted to have children, or families who wanted to be able to have offspring. And in this particular image, Hera is pictured as seated and holding in her hand a pomegranate, this fruit with many seeds that is a an ancient symbol of fertility. Well, Pestum itself is on the coast, and it became malarial at about the same time it became Christian, in fact, and eventually the settlement got pushed further and further up the hills. And in the new settlement, there's a church, of course, and it's dedicated not to Hera, obviously, but to Mary, to the Madonna. And her image, her icon there is as La Madonna del Granato, Mary with the pomegranate, and there she sits holding her pomegranate to this day.
How about this, Bart Ehrman? You teach New Testament studies. How do you tell your students about not the persistence, but the presence of what we call paganism in the modern world?
I think in our Western civilization, Christianity has in fact changed considerably from what it was when it overcame the other religions of the Roman Empire. Christianity then was a very exclusivistic, intolerant religion, which insisted that it was the only right answer to the questions of meaning, the questions of how to live, and the questions of God, gods, and the afterlife. This intolerance stood at odds with everything found in paganism. In paganism, there were hundreds of different religions that were extremely diverse and also extremely tolerant of one another. Christianity in the modern context is by and large far more tolerant than it used to be. In Western civilization, when we embrace a live and let live ideology, that in fact I think is a remnant of paganism, rather a useful remnant, I might add. It isn't at all the sort of expression of Christian freedom that one would have found in antiquity. Mm-hmm. I think many of the ideals of paganism have fortunately survived, even if the cults themselves have by and large passed away.
Have you just delivered a defense of paganism or a description of it in the modern world?
Well, I think that there was a lot to be said for paganism. In the sense that it was extremely tolerant. I think that much is a description, and in fact, tolerance is something I would personally embrace.
Peter Burian is a professor of classics at Duke University. Bart Ehrman teaches in the Department of Religious Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Next week on Soundings, conversations about sainthood during the time of the early Christian church and about religion and the decline of magic in the modern world. My guests will be Carmela Franklin of St. John's University and Sir Keith Thomas of the University of Oxford. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Major funding for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.